Been in children's ministry for 18 years now, and so I'm standing before you not as somebody who knows anything, but as somebody who knows a lot of what not to do. So I'm hoping today we could talk together. I could share some of the amazing mistakes that I've made over the 18 years, which there are plenty, and be able to hear some of your mistakes as well, and we can learn and grow together. How's that sound? Sound good?
Awesome.
I hope you're okay sitting in rows. I kept asking people, should we do something else? Everybody said, no, rows. So we're in rows. But I want to just take about 5 to 10 minutes before we jump into some of the children's ministry things and kind of piggyback off of what Pastor Aaron was just saying, because, man, what a great word, wasn't it?
Amen.
And it's funny because this weekend we just did something with our leaders about Joseph, and the whole time he's speaking, like, God's just bringing back to memory all the things we just talked about. And I just want to share two quick pieces with you, because I think sometimes we can know and understand that God's called us to be something and not necessarily understand what the next steps are to that, because you're in the middle of a pressure cooker at times. Anybody feel like they're at that before? You're just thrown into the middle of it and trying to figure things out, and you don't know where you're supposed to go or what's supposed to happen with it. So I want to just share something that God revealed to me as I was reading Joseph's life over the last several weeks. You know, it's interesting. Ecclesiastes 6:10 talks about the fact that we all have a destiny, and it says there's no use arguing with God about the destiny because he's already determined who we're supposed to be. Not what we're supposed to do or where we're supposed to go, but who we're supposed to be. And that's, it says that, so there's no use to argue with God about your destiny. Those things are decided. Very interesting to me that when we talk about Joseph, if I were to say, hey, what was Joseph's destiny? It's easy for us to think, what's the destination he ended up at? Like, what was the end result? Was that he became in charge of Egypt and God did great things through him? But I don't think that was Joseph's destiny. You know, when you think about what Pastor Aaron was talking about, when you think about Ecclesiastes 6:10, his destiny was something bigger than that. It was who he was supposed to be through the process, right? And so there's a reason that Joseph kept rising to the occasion when he's in Potiphar's house. Potiphar says, I'm not going to concern myself with anything except for what to eat. Joseph, take over. And so Joseph's able to manage this entire property as a foreign slave. He's managing an entire property for Potiphar. Why did that happen? Well, because he had to be something in the middle of it. He had to be somebody of character and somebody that was trustworthy and somebody that Potiphar would look at and say, hey, this guy's a slave. Yeah, this guy's from another country, but I'm going to give him full rights to everything. That doesn't happen just because he was, you know, God's blessing was on him. That happens because he was being who God designed him to be, a man of integrity, a man of wisdom, a man of insight. And so he raises to this spot of integrity and this spot of elevation and leadership. That was God's destiny over his life. And then same thing happens in the prison. The warden gives him full reign of everything. And then it happens again when he gets out and Pharaoh gives him second command of everything and parades him around town. All those things were the same pattern. None of them, what he did was the end results. The destiny was who he would be in the middle of all those things. So how did he get there? Because I don't know about you, but I've been in those pressure cooker moments. And so it's interesting how God worked. He took me where he wanted me to be. All I had to do was focus on who I was supposed to be, right? So how did Joseph do that? I want to give you two quick things that he did that I want to encourage all of you. These are going to be so easy for me to say, yet so hard for you to put your head around if you're walking through one of those circumstances right now. Number one, Joseph had to forget all that he was walking through. And it's so easy for us to get so caught up in our circumstance that that's all we see. But if God's called us to minister to kids, it can't be about where we're ministering to them or what the church is doing or where they're walking or what our leadership is doing. It has to be about the kids. So I have to be able to say, I'm going to forget those things and I'm going to focus on what God has for me. And so as hard as that is, friends, I want to encourage you today, find a way to say, forget everything else. Let me focus on what God has for me. Second thing is this. After forgetting those things, I just want to ask God to make me fruitful, to pour out anything he has for me to be fruitful in what he's called me to do, okay? Not fruitful in terms of my own personality or my own self, but no, fruitful in doing the ministry that he's put in front of me. In other words, I want to see kids baptized. I want to see kids understand a heart of worship. I want to see kids grow up following God and not walking away from him. This has been my prayer for my own personal kids, and I pray this over our ministry all the time, is God, raise up a generation of kids that doesn't know the hurts and pains of walking away from you. Man, I would love a generation. I believe in testimony because I have one, but I love testimonies that say, I never walked away from God, and it has been so good. I want those type of testimonies for this next generation, that they're not led astray and they understand God. And so I want to focus on the fruitfulness of that. I want to say, God, make me fruitful in those things. Now, here's the amazing part for me when I read the story of Joseph. This is why this matters to me. Joseph had two sons in the land of Egypt before Jacob died. Their names were Manasseh and Ephraim. Manasseh just happens to mean, according to Joseph in the book of Genesis chapter 48, Manasseh means forgetting, because the Lord has caused me to forget my family and my household in all that has happened to me. His first son is named Forgetting because he realizes, I can't focus on what's happened to me. I can't focus on what circumstances put me here. I have to focus on what God wants me to be. And so he's able to name his son that. Imagine Manasseh coming to him all the time because names meant so much back then and saying, Dad, why did you call me Forgetting? What's the purpose of that? And he would have had to explain over and over again, hey, son, it's because let me tell you the journey that Dad has walked through, yet here's who I'm still able to be. And then what's Ephraim's name? Fruitfulness, because God has caused me to be fruitful in this foreign land. When Jacob comes and puts the blessing on Joseph, here's another interesting part of Joseph's story. You guys probably all know this. Instead of laying his hand on Manasseh, who's the oldest son, who's supposed to get the first blessing, what's he do? He puts his hand on Ephraim. And Joseph says, whoa, hold on a second, you're getting this wrong. But what does Jacob say? No, I know what I'm doing. And he blesses Ephraim, and then Manasseh. Why? Because God wants to bless our forgetting. He wants us to move past our circumstance, but even more so, God wants to make us so fruitful that the people around us are affected, that generations understand. Here's the amazing part. Do you know what he says after that? He says, from now out, the Israelites will use you to bless one another. And there's a saying that says, may you be as fruitful as Ephraim and Manasseh. And they say that to this day. The Jewish people still say that right before Yom Kippur or before Sabbath. They get their kids together. They lay their hands on them and say, may you be as fruitful as Ephraim and Manasseh. In other words, this is what it means to them. May you, in a land that's foreign, where people are trying to live a different way, serve different gods, may you not be like that. And may you be fruitful in how you do what you do as you be who God's called you to be. So I love what Aaron was saying because it's so vitally important to our destiny that in the middle of our circumstance, we're able to say, yeah, but God's called me to be something. And what's the outcome of us being that? Everybody around us is affected. And in our world, it's children are affected in a way that helps them understand who God is and follow after him. Such an important piece of who we are. And then Ephraim and Manasseh, of course, they have the biggest property out of everybody when you put them both together. They got the Jordan River going right through the middle of it. They got some major cities in their land. And they're the grandchildren of Jacob. They're not even the direct children of Jacob, all because of Joseph, I believe, him standing and saying, I just need to be who God says I am. And he'll work out the details of that. So no matter where you're at, look, that's the easy part for me to say. Here's the practical. We're together in this. And I love what Chris said. We're only so good when we do it ourselves. But when we're together, I mean, we get everybody's greatness, right? So you're not alone in this. It's been a journey for all of us. Even if you've been in ministry only for a couple of years, you've got stories to share that are going to help somebody. And you've got things that you've walked through already that you've learned that when we all learn it together, man, we're going to be so much better as a ministry throughout the Illinois district. Amen. Yeah. Any thoughts to that? Because this is participatory today. Any thoughts or any questions or comments?
Okay.
Okay. So here's what I want to do for you today. I want to be able to open up conversation for where you're at. Okay, so I have a whole bunch of topics and a whole bunch of ideas, but I would love feedback from all of you. But in order to do that, I got to get to know you just a tad bit. Can you raise your hand if you're comfortable enough to do this? If you've been in ministry for at least 10 years. Okay, keep those hands up for a second. If it's been majority of children or student ministry, well, let's do children or student ministries. It should be all of us, right? Okay, if it's been children's ministry, the majority of that, will you keep your hand up? Okay, good, good. Raise your hand if you've only been in ministry for about 5 years. Okay, awesome. Anything under 5 years? Awesome. Hey, and if you're comfortable doing this, would you raise your hand if you're not a paid minister, that you do it because it's what God's called you to do? Amen. Amen. Ooh. Hey, yes, come on, guys. I wanna help everybody, but I want to cater to you for a little bit, if that's okay. And we're all going to learn together and grow in this. But we want to be able to first say thank you, because I know that's not easy, and it's the most important job in the church that you do, sometimes probably without thanks. How do I know? Because I do it for pay, and I never get thanks. And a lot of people, I said, it's not true, I get thanked a lot, but a lot of people around this room will probably tell you, it's not a super thankful job all the time. You get to hear the complaints, you get to hear what kid had what, and what shouldn't have happened, where, and but thank you, because it super matters. And I want to let the four, I think it was four or five of you, choose this first topic. I'm going to give you a couple of options, if you don't mind. And I thought there might be a TV in here, but there's not. So I'm just going to read these out loud. Here's your, I got six different things on here. You ready for this? Building structure, structures that withstand a storm. Curriculum that makes sense. I don't know what curriculum you should use. Sick, contagious children's ministry. Vision, dreaming while wide awake. Aim, hitting the target every time. A piece of the dragon, finding help that will help you. Gap, the space between volunteer and I couldn't do this without you, and then other, whatever you want to talk about. So, will one of those people that are doing this and maybe doing another job in their life that wants to hear something specific, would you be bold enough to pick one of those? Or other, yes. Okie dokie. Structure in the storm. All right, everybody take out your paper and a pen, please, because we're going to do a little bit of homework for just a second. I want you to write down, why do you do children's ministry? And if you're not in children's ministry and you want to write, why do I do ministry? That would be great. Why do you do children's ministry? Should be one sentence, should be something that you easily can reiterate. Second question, if that's why you do ministry, why do you do it at the church you're at right now? Good. How many of you have, excuse me, how many of you have ever written that down before? Raise your hand. Good. How many of you have never written that down before? So, here's my why I do children's ministry. It's because every child deserves the opportunity to know God and His plan for their life. In fact, that's become our children's ministry's tagline. We believe that every child, no matter where they're at, absolutely deserve the opportunity, and they're not getting that opportunity, so we want to make that happen. I'm going to get to the structure in just a second. You just got to bear with me for a second. So then why do I do it at Naperville at Calvary Church? Well, because we have the privilege of being number three in the nation for high schools with the most heroin use in the U.S. It's pretty awesome, right? Down the road from us is Aurora, Illinois. In fact, our church is actually in Aurora, even though we have a Naperville address. Aurora has 75% of its students live under the poverty level in the public school system. And so they get government aid and funding somehow. And then when I look around our community, I realize, man, a church like Calvary has an opportunity to do something about that. And so I believe with all my heart, God's called me to make sure every child gets the opportunity to know God and his plan for their life. And Calvary is the beautiful outlet for me to be able to say, hey, we can do this for these communities that have these really big issues. And I want to be part of the solution to that. I want to see God do something for these kids through Calvary Church. And so what that does is that makes me stop and say all the time, what are we doing? How are we going to do this? What's happening? And so if we're going to talk about structure, the very first thing we have to be able to answer is, why do you do children's ministry at your church? What are you wanting to see? Because I could sit up here all day and tell you what the Calvary structure is, but the problem is your church doesn't necessarily fit what Calvary's structure is because you're not in the same type of a community. And so where I know a couple people have bus ministries, they're able to bring students in and do great things. That's just not possible where we're at because there's just too many logistics. It's not going to be able to happen. Plus, there's a church. We're going to pass 50 churches on the way to where we're going to bring them. Wouldn't make sense. We're not going to their community. We're asking them to come into our building, and there's nothing in between. Where you might be able to say, hey, there's no church anywhere nearby that's going to be able to do what we're asking to see happen for these kids. So because of my why and because of why I do it at my church, I'm going to create a bus ministry. Does that make sense? So in order for us to talk structure, you have to be able to say, what's so important? What would happen? What's the problem if we don't have a vibrant children's ministry at our church? What's the unanswered problem that's going to take place? And if that's the case, maybe my structure for my ministry should somehow feed towards this is what we're going to do. Does that make sense? Am I like making it? Is that like stretching? You guys okay? See, so having the idea of why you're going to do ministry at your church helps begin to build the structure. Because then I'm able to say, well, if this is important to us, if this is something that we need to be doing, then I'm going to start to build teams around it. And I'm going to start putting importance in finance and funding towards, and I'm going to say, this is what we have to do. When I go to my senior pastor, whether I'm on staff or I'm volunteer, I'm going to be able to give him a vision for, hey, you said you want to reach our community. You said our church is about X, Y, and Z. In order for us to do that, here's what I want to do with our children's ministry. First step is always going to your senior pastor. You want to be in alignment with, or if you're in a structure that's not necessarily a senior pastor, maybe there's like an executive or some sort. You always want to be able to stop and cast vision with them first to make sure you're on the right page where the church is headed. Otherwise, you're spinning your tires and you're beating your head against the wall and you're like, oh, I don't know what's happening. And most of the time, if you've heard from God on what you're supposed to be doing at the church you're at, and you're not in alignment with your senior pastor, it's just a misunderstanding of how somebody's saying it somewhere. It's not a, oh, well, this I heard from God, he didn't or she didn't or whatever. No, it's, hey, we're just not communicating at the same level right now, and it's a conversation over some lunches or some time with some coffee or maybe even some refreshing and saying, okay, tell me your heart again so I can make sure the piece that I can figure out that's not lining up. But I would encourage everybody to sit down and take some time and say, if I'm called to do ministry because of this, and I'm called to this church to do ministry that way because of this, this is the first thing I want to look into. After that, the next piece to your structure has to be people. You can't do anything without people, right? I think sometimes for those of you that don't necessarily have a huge staff that you get to work with, this might come a little easier because you get it. You can easily go find people to help you because otherwise you're doing it all. And I think sometimes when you have other staff people, it's easy to become staff driven to say, oh, our staff's going to take care of this. But at the same time, I also know it's not always easy to find people, right? We all are in the same boat that if we're in ministry, especially children's ministry, we're always looking for more people. We call our specialist. It's kind of a mind game for us to say, hey, they've gone from volunteer to specializing in what they do. So it helps us train them and know what we're going to teach them so that they're not just volunteers, but eventually they're going to specialize in reaching kids. I can walk you through that process too if you'd like, but the people are the most important part to what God's called you to do as a ministry, and so you have to get people around you who will help you grow and see God fulfill the ministry. So let me jump actually to what I call a piece of the dragon. I was at a church 2 summers ago that did this amazing children's program in the summertime. It was Chicago Tap Church. If you've never been up there, they do this huge thing called Kid Week Adventure for their kids, and it's phenomenal, okay? Back when I was in Normal, Illinois, I used to build sets and bring it up to them for it, and then all of a sudden they just went, Well, now I go and I take their sets and bring them back to me. And they had this huge dragon that came up at the end, and it was amazing, and it's got wings flapping, smoke's coming out of its nose, it's on the back of their stage, and the kids erupted. And I'm like, okay, we're doing something like this. This is so great. And so I go up afterwards, and I'm talking with a couple of their staff members, and they're showing me around, and I say, hey, tell me about the dragon. Well, the girl that was in charge of the whole drama piece hands me a bolt. She goes, well, this is all I have. It's just a piece of the dragon. And I'm like, okay, so explain, like, but what happened? She goes, I have no idea. Hold on a second. She calls this architect who's one of their volunteers over and says, hey, can you explain to Michael just how the dragon works? He goes, yeah, you know what? I drew it, but let me call over so-and-so. About 10 layers deep, finally somebody's able to tell me, oh yeah, come up here, I'll show you. We were inside moving this lever and doing this. But here was what really got me. It wasn't one person trying to figure out how to make this whole thing happen. They knew that they needed, hey, for this to work properly, I gotta have somebody who can design it. I gotta have somebody who can build it. I gotta have somebody who can help make it run. They didn't stop with, well, I'm just gonna make it happen. And I think sometimes we get so into ministry, knowing what we wanna see happen and where we wanna go, that we just kind of make it happen. And what happens is, we get stuck doing it all, and if we're doing it all, something else isn't happening. And so, here's Annie, who's standing here over the whole thing and has no idea how the main piece of that night even worked or cared how it worked. She cared that the whole event went the way it was supposed to happen. And we have to be able to stop and say, that's where I need to be if I'm going to be the one to help focus and direct and make sure our kids are getting what they need to have. Does that make sense? So we have to be able to say, well, then it starts with, I need to find somebody. Now, some of you are probably thinking, yeah, but we're still trying to find someone to be in the nursery this Sunday, right? Yes. Okay, so are we. Just so you know, that never goes away. Right, Nicole? Okay. Hey, I got some staff members here with me that I want you guys to get to know before the end here, because if you have questions about anything, they're here to help answer those questions, okay? So nursery person, early childhood, elementary. I got a director of operations who helps organize. If you want to know anything about organization, Teresa, right here. So yeah, everything from background checks to how to set up an event to how to run. That's that person. So I want to make sure they're a resource for you, and we'll make sure you have numbers and names. If you ever have questions, you want policies, you want anything, we're going to give it to you. We want to make sure to support you and partner with you on that. Okay, you're not alone. That's what I'm trying to say. We're all together. Where was I?
Dragon, yeah.
The dragon.
You need to find somebody.
The dragon. Oh, you gotta find somebody. So I know you need somebody in the nursery, but if you stop and spend all your time finding that one nursery person, which, by the way, I don't know how it works in your church, but God always brings somebody along and makes things happen, doesn't he? Maybe not. Maybe you're like, no, the kids were in the service crying. Listen, keep working at it. God will cause things and people to come along. Keep talking about it. Keep telling people, hey, we gotta make this happen. We want these kids. Never put it about the adult service or about the parents. It's always about the kids. And we wanna make sure every kid has the chance to know God and his plan for their life. So guess what? When kids are infants, we have them in the nursery and we're holding them and praying over them by name off their name tag. Why? Because we want God's blessing on them. At 2 and 3 year olds, we do a large group. Why? Because we want them to see the gospel come to life through puppets, through drama, through video. Like, present that as often as you can to adults. Okay? And then let God take that and burn in the hearts of people. He'll bring people along. It might take time. And like I said, we still have Sundays. You could ask Nicole and Annalise and Donna even. In our early childhood, in our nursery area, we have Sundays where like, oh, how are we going to open this room? Because we do the ratios, you know, 2 adults to every room with so many kids. And after that, the room closes. And we're always like, shoot, can we just throw more people in there and have more kids in there? But you can't. And so every Sunday, we still try to work that out. But we know as long as we keep bringing that to the people and putting it in front of them, God's going to help people come along eventually. Anybody else agree with that and can attest to it? Guys, girls, nobody? Okay, I'm the only person? Okay, good, good. So just keep faithful to that. But then start. You can't stop there. If you know God's calling you to do a bus ministry, it starts by saying, hey, what type of person do I want to take over that? What kind of heart would they have to have? What type of culture am I trying to create on a team of people that are going to go into another part of the city and bring in kids that are very unchurched? What type of people am I looking for to make that happen? Once you define those things, actually, let me walk you through those steps real quick, because here's how we do it. And I had a handout for this, and it's on the bus. Um, This is what it looks like for us. Okay, we start with a couple of questions. Where am I at? First thing we do is we say we want to define the culture. What type of culture are we going to have for this team? What are we wanting it to feel like? What are we wanting people to act like? What should it be? If you don't stop and define the culture for a team, define what you want your team of volunteers to feel like and be like, guess what happens? They define that culture. And the last thing you want is a bunch of people who are doing it because they felt guilted into it or they felt bad for you. No, that's not the culture you're looking for. You're looking for somebody who's passionate about. Maybe you're starting with your Sunday team. Like, don't overlook this for events or something like that. What do you want for your Sunday team? Define that culture. What do we want when kids come in here? We have what's called the SICK policy, which Ryan helped us come up with many years ago. SICK stands for Safe, Invited, Connected Kids. And we have sayings for each of those. Safety and security is our number one priority, that every kid would feel safe and secure enough to share their lives with their leaders and their peers. We tell people all the time, if you're coming on our team, safety is the number one priority. You better make a parent feel so good about dropping off their kid that when they walk away, that kid feels good about it. Do you know the number one reason kids don't go into a room? Because mom and dad aren't confident about it dropping them off. When they have a little of anxiety and fear, that kid picks it up and they say, I'm not going. Or if a kid whines one little bit, what's the parent say? I don't know why, they just don't like that room. Actually, they don't know any better. You just told them they don't like the room. So stop saying that. So we want kids and parents to feel so good about dropping their kids off that that kid begins to share their life with us. Inviting, we believe every child deserves to feel like we've been waiting for them to arrive. I don't want any kid to ever feel like we're sitting there going, ugh, they're here again. Or I don't want somebody to come up to our check-in space and feel like somebody didn't greet them and love them and be there for them. So everybody that's coming onto our team, we remind them, look, safety is not the only thing. We want them to feel invited. You're part of making that happen. So every time you see somebody, I do this. I tell people, if you can't do this, don't come to our ministry. Because you gotta be able to get down on the kids' level. If you can't talk to the kid, parents will always comment on this. I sometimes will ignore a parent that's walking up to say hi to their kid first because I want that kid to feel welcome. I love the parents. I have so much relationship with our parents. But man, I want that kid to know that they're important, they matter. And that changes their whole entire atmosphere when they're in that building from the very first time someone greets them like that. So I want to make sure everybody's getting that inviting feeling as they walk into our building. Connecting, see, the third and final, well, kids is next, but the third piece to that. As every child deserves the opportunity to connect to God, their peers, and the leaders who will help them make those connections. And we want to make sure that if somebody's coming into our ministry, they're not babysitting, they're not just changing diapers. No, you're helping connect them to God and their peers. So we constantly say that, we remind them of that. It's never about being in service so parents can have their time in service. We're thankful that happens. That's a side effect, though, to what we do. We minister to the kids. And we remind them that always. We did a big thing called Main Event where we invited other teams from our church to be part of our summer program this year. It was in the evening for the first time ever. We've never done an evening thing since I've been there in 12 years. And this year, our summer program on Wednesday night was in the evening. So I was able to ask, like our Spanish ministries did security for us and our parking lot people did parking lot service for us, security and all that. Well. At the end of it, I can't tell you how many of them came to me and said, I didn't know you do all this for kids. They're like, yep, every Sunday. Because people just don't get it. So I want to remind them constantly, no, we're not just watching kids. We get the chance to connect them to God. We're doing this regularly. So those three main things, and then we say the K is kids. We want them to remember it's always about the kids. That's the culture of who we are. We're safe, inviting, connected, and it's about the kids. So if you want to be part of our team and do those things, awesome. If you think it's for some fame and glory, because that's what children's ministry is, right? You're in the wrong place. So Chris is handing out the handouts to this, so hopefully you can walk through it later. A couple quick things about culture, though. You want to define culture. People want to be part of something that stretches them. So don't ever be afraid to ask somebody to do something. I think sometimes we get in our heads, well, we just don't want to bother people. Well, if God's put everybody in the church right now that we need to do the work he's called us to do, don't you think somebody has to be stretched somewhere? And so God's got somebody sitting in your church right now that is just waiting for somebody to encourage them to be involved. That same church I was telling you about, Chicago Tab, there was a guy that played this really goofy character. In fact, it was super like, he was the comic relief of the thing. I'm like, that guy's awesome. I can't wait to meet him. Older gentleman. And then so afterwards, I got to go meet him. Turns out that his job, you ready for this? He was one of the judges, local judges for the courts, and was in the middle of some actually very heavy violent related cases during the daytime, and at nighttime was coming in. That was his relief also, was to be fun and with those kids. I never would have thought to ask a judge to play a goofy character for a bunch of kids. I would have thought it's not worth his time, not worth his energy, but he found outlet in it, and he was able to minister to the kids and families all because somebody came and asked him. Don't be afraid to ask people of quality. Don't always feel like you have to look for the teenager who's just sitting in the hallway. They're awesome when they show up and put their phone down and wear appropriate clothing, right? However, I also know there's judges and there's attorneys and teachers and full-time workers of all sorts that are willing to say, man, I want to be part of making this happen, but nobody ever asks them. So I would encourage you, get to know people in your church, doesn't matter what they do for a living, and begin to talk to them about children's ministry. Because people want to be part of something that stretches them. Also, people evaluate if it is worth their time by measuring the way it has or hasn't caused them to grow. So they want a culture that's going to make them stretch them and pull them and say, hey, maybe you've never been on the stage before with a microphone in your hand. We're going to help you learn that. Why don't you come be part of this? And once they begin to feel like, man, I'm growing, this is stretching me, they become more bought in and more part of it. Next thing you know, they're saying, hey, what else can I do? Right? Those are the people you want to look for. Which, by the way, we say this all the time. The fastest way to grow your volunteer base, have everybody invite somebody. So if they have a friend anywhere on earth that can pass a background check, then and some that might not be able to, just joking, don't ever do that. Then have them go invite somebody. Say, hey, when you're at your small group this week, or when you're hanging out with people in the coffee shop or whatever you have at your church, can you just talk to somebody and say, hey, would you be part of doing this with me? It's the best small group they're ever going to have. It's the best relational thing they're ever going to have. Have them come be part of the ministry also. Just so you know, we say it all the time. Not good at it, okay? We're trying to do it all. We say it over and over and over again. You just got to keep saying it to people and keep encouraging them. Bring somebody with you. Invite somebody along, and you'll see your ministry base grow. So that first piece is defining culture. Next thing you have to do is you have to identify leadership, okay? So after you say this is the type of culture we're looking for, you have to say, what kind of leader am I looking to have with me, right? A team is only as good as the people in it. An attitude is as important as capabilities. So you want to find the people that are going to buy into you and be part of and help make it happen. We have a piece of our ministry right now that for the last 12 years, I've been working on helping unify and grow into what God's called us to do as an entire ministry. And sometimes we have to fight some attitudes, right? We have to push against, I know you've never done it that way, and I know our church for 7,000 years has done this. However, God has called us to this. And yes, that fits in here, and this is exactly what it looks like when it fits in, and I want you to be part of it. But in order to do that, we have to do this together this way. We got to get good at having those type of conversations, especially in children's ministry, where it seems like we're very program-oriented, right? There's programs thrown at us all over the place, and here's why I say that we started with find out why you do what you do and why you do it at your church, because you should never pick a program or a curriculum until you know why you're doing what you do at your church. There's a billion good curriculums out there, right? In fact, there's a ton of great ones. Doesn't mean you have to pick it because it's great until you know why you're going to do ministry at your church. You have to know why you do ministry at your church before you say, yeah, we're going to do this. And maybe you've stepped into a spot where certain things have been going on or certain curriculum's been used or whatever. I would just encourage you to take some time, step back and pray and say, yeah, but is that what God's calling us to right now? Talk with your leadership, get them behind it. Never communicate those type of things to your people until you talk with your leadership about it. And then find a way to say, hey guys, I believe God's calling us to this. Before you say we're not doing this or not doing that, this is what we are called to, and have people come along. Because you gotta have people who are gonna be good attitudes and support things. One rotten attitude will spoil the whole entire thing. So you gotta continue to fight against that. Any questions so far? Any thoughts? Is this helpful? Should I skip it and go to something else? Nothing? Okay, good. And then find people for your teams that have complementary skills, not just similar skills. I love meeting people who do things that I couldn't even pretend to do, right? And then I love being able to do things that other people on our team can't do, because then when we come together, now we just got this well-rounded team. And the problem is we like to find people who have the same humor as us, that have the same likes as us, that have the same abilities as us, and all of a sudden we're all sitting in a room and we're like, yeah, but who can build that? And everybody's looking at each other like, I don't know. Okay, well, then let's not do it. Well, that's not what you want. You want to find people. I've got a guy who I spend a lot of time with that sometimes I have to spend extra time with, but I need this. That sounds really bad, like I'm using him. Wow, that's not really bad. The time I spend with him, though, sometimes has to be very intentional on, I need him to be part of what we're doing. So I got to help him buy in, and I got to buy into him, because his giftings is what God has called to be part of this overall thing. And without him, we can't do it. And we're stepping back and saying, well, let's try something different. Never want to have that happen, because I didn't find the people that are right there and pull them in. And even for me, I'm a creative dreamer type. So I don't want a bunch of creative dreamers with me, because if we do, we're just talking all day, right? I gotta have people that are gonna be able to say yes, but in order to do that, we have to do X, Y, and Z. In order for those things to happen, we need this type of person. Like, have to have that full bit, right? So we wanna make sure we're constantly looking for other pieces of teams. How do you do that? Talk to other ministries. Talk to other people in your church. Your youth ministry, I love to say this, I believe your youth ministry needs to serve in the church, not just in your ministry, but in the church. If there's such a drop-off of students not going to adult services once they get out of high school, to me, the biggest problem with that is because they've never been connected to the church, not because they walk away from God. Nobody took them at a young age and said, we serve, we get involved, it's your church, it's your body, it's your community. And so if we can help them do that through our ministries and other ministries, then we bring in all these skills and giftings as well that can help be part of it, right? Okay, I'm going to move really fast now. Then define what their role is. You have to give them a very specific job description. I would encourage you, no matter what part of your ministry you're working on right now, no matter where you're at, make sure you stop and say, I want every person in here to have a very specific role. That will kill your team so fast. If you have volunteers that just stop showing up all of a sudden, chances are they had no idea why they were supposed to be there in the first place. So if you could give every person a job description, I know that sounds overwhelming. I'll tell you what, go to Starbucks for an hour and just dream up, what would I want people to do when they walk in on Sunday morning, okay? In no time, you could come up with, I need somebody at the door greeting kids as they walk in. Great, well, you just defined a greeter, now give them a specific role. Make every kid feel like we've been waiting for them to arrive. That's easy, right? Okay, that's your job, thanks. We need the sound and lights to come on. Oh, sounds like you just came up with another job. Define it. Hey, you're going to make sound and lighting so smooth that it's part of service. Okay, go ahead. Go for it. So stop and take time and give them a specific role. Remember, they're intellectual beings who seek fulfillment in their work. They're not dumb, wanting just to be told what to do. So you have to give them opportunity to do that. Fast forwarding, any questions to that? It's pretty straightforward. We have one-sentence job descriptions. If you want to see what those look like, we'd be willing to send them to you. I believe in one-sentence job descriptions for staff, for volunteers, for whatever it might be. Even our coaches that help us with main, like we have someone who's considered a coach who oversees Missionettes and Royal Rangers as volunteers, and they run all of it, right? They have a specific one-sentence job description. My specific one-sentence job description is, to inspire teams and staff around the vision of NXT Kids, which is a very loaded statement, which means I have to have a vision for NXT Kids, and I have to be able to raise up a staff and raise up volunteers who can see that vision come through. But it's one sentence, always reminds me, this is what I'm doing. I'm inspiring staff and teams to carry out the vision of NXT Kids. I hope this is okay, guys. All right. The next piece, evaluation. This is the piece that I think as a church we miss all the time. People have no idea how well we're doing because we don't stop and say, first the wins. Right, we gotta celebrate wins, right? So when you have one kid come up and say, hey, this all makes sense to me all of a sudden. I was sitting in service and I heard what you said at Christmas time and wow, I didn't realize that's how all this worked together. Man, that's something to celebrate with every single person, especially your nursery people, to be able to say, look, all of us together, this one kid just got it. It's worth it. I don't care if nobody else did today. That one kid was worth it. Because if one kid can understand who God is and it becomes real to them, everything we do is worth it. It doesn't matter what size your church is, right? One kid gets it, it's worth it. So celebrate those wins, but then also be able to stop and say, hey, yeah, when you didn't show up on time, and when that room didn't open, I just gotta help you understand what that created, okay? So now parents were standing at the front of the nursery. Well, let's not pick on the nursery anymore. The parents were standing in the front of the elementary room because it wasn't open yet. They didn't get to service on time. They're frustrated, that kid's frustrated. Service, you weren't prepared when you walked in. Man, look, I love you and appreciate you, but we gotta do better than that, okay? They gotta hear those things and we gotta be okay saying it. Why? Because it's not about them and it's not about us. What's it about? The kids and them understanding God. So we gotta be willing to evaluate and give them that evaluation. Feedback is their compass, okay? In their journey, they want to know how they're doing and what value they are adding. So give them regular communication. It goes a long way in building a high performance team. I would say you need to communicate that with every level of volunteer that you have. Somebody who only comes once a month, share with them how you feel like they're doing, okay? And then the last part is you gotta build trust. Trust fosters self-esteem. The way you manage and communicate with people tells a lot about how much you trust them. You don't ever wanna dump things off on people. Volunteers aren't a means to an end. They're a partner in the solution. And so you always wanna make sure you communicate trust and you communicate leadership to them, give them responsibility, let them know they're doing well. And if they're not doing well, start with, what's going on? Is everything okay in life, right? And I would encourage you to, as often as you can, outside of services, find time to ask your people how they're doing. You're their pastor, okay? Doesn't matter what, where you're at, with where you're on staff or not, you're their pastor. Pastor Jamie Kemp, anybody know him? He's in Indonesia as a missionary. He was on staff with us for a while, spent a lot of time with him. He used to always tell me this, when you meet with your people as a leader, doesn't matter if you're a pastor or not, as a leader, they expect you to be pastoral. So when you sit with them, never apologize for speaking something pastoral over them. And man, sometimes I feel like I'm too bold, but someone will be sharing something with me. Not too long ago, this one's kind of a friend, but at the same time, somebody who is involved in ministry, and they said something about not feeling like they get enough out of church. And I, as they're talking, like the Holy Spirit just came over me, and I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, hold on a second. I didn't realize church was about you. I'm sorry. And then I, like that sarcastically and that straight to their face, I said, I thought church was us coming together to minister to the body of Christ. I didn't realize it was about you. Okay, go ahead. And he just looked at me like, oh, okay. I'm not saying be that bold. Maybe there's times where God's gonna lead you to be that bold. I was with this person and it's been a continual conversation ever since then. But I do think our people want us to be pastoral to them and speak over them and to help them to grow. I'm gonna stop there, but I understand volunteers and the people that we work with are what make our structures and what make things work for us. So I would encourage you just to look at what does it look like to build these things. But it all starts with, why do I do this? Why? Because that's where you build your vision for your ministry. If you don't have the vision for your ministry, nobody else is gonna have it. And so God's called you to shepherd the resources and the ministry and the kids and the families that are in ministry with you. So find a way to tell them, this is why we do what we do, and move from there. Does that make sense? Yeah. Awesome. I'm gonna stop, and if you wanna leave, feel free to. If you have questions or you wanna talk more about volunteers or any of that, please stay in here. If you just have random questions, that'd be awesome too.